Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of PageCast podcast brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. My name is Soela Langeni from Book Circle Capital, an independent bookshop that focuses on African literature. The book we're talking about today is The Lion's Den, and it's my honor and privilege to talk to the author Iris Mwanza. Iris is a Zambian-American author and gender equality advocate. Born and raised in Zambia, she studied law at the University of Zambia, furthering her studies at Cornell University and obtaining her PhD in international relations from Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. She's currently a deputy director of the Women in Leadership team in the Gender Equality Division of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Hello, Iris, and welcome, and thank you for talking to us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted and very excited for our conversation.
Congratulations on your book, Best Things First. Please tell us how this story came about. I read somewhere that it's been 9 years in the making.
Yes. Well, to be fair to myself, I have been working full time. So it's not nine years at my laptop toiling away, but it has been a labor of love. I wrote it as a thriller, but it also addresses some really important themes that are very important to me and things that I am passionate about, mainly around gender equality.
So it's a story that came to you like a while ago. How did it come about? Is it just as you're noticing issues in your line of work?
Well, I would say two things. I think one, all of us are creative beings, right? If you think about the cave dwellers, they went out and they collected pigments and they produced beautiful art on their walls. So my creative outlet is writing, and I knew that I wanted to write a book. And like many of us, I was telling people, I want to write a book. And then people started asking me back, oh, so where is that book? And I'm like, I haven't really started writing it beyond in my head. And so I had to move from saying to doing an implementation and that difficult task. And as a sort of naive person who hadn't actually written a book, I'd of course written papers, academic papers, and white papers, all sorts of different papers, but never a book. It was an education for me in how difficult it is, how long it takes. So that's sort of the creative side. I wanted to a very ambitious project for my creativity and to keep it focused and to have discipline around it. But the motivation for this particular story was around what I had been seeing and experiencing growing up living in Zambia. It is a very patriarchal society. It is also, unfortunately, very homophobic. And so there was one story in particular that stayed with me. I was a young lawyer at the time, and I read a story in the paper about a who was described as a young boy or male walking through the market in a dress. And this unfortunate kid got set upon by a mob. That was terrible enough, but worse still was the journalistic approach was that this essentially child provoked the mob. And there was not an ounce of sympathy or empathy around a kid that's been beaten up by a mob in the town square, you know, the town market. So outrage kind of stayed with me, but I didn't really know what to do with it. So when that combined with the creativity, combined with this audacious statement that I had been throwing around quite casually, came together, it felt this was a story that insisted. This was the story that I wanted to tell. And the two protagonists, one is a young, fierce, ambitious, determined, but naive lawyer called Grace Ruth, and her client, Wilbess Mulenga, otherwise known as Bessie, who is a queer teen who has been thrown into prison for crimes against nature, which is the Zambian penal code criminalizing same-sex relations.
thank you for persisting with the story and managing that with your day job and all your other responsibility to what we have today. I was interested in knowing where the title of the book came from, because I noticed in the first few pages you quote the book of Daniel, you know, chapter 6 from the Bible. And I wondered, does that lion's den come from there?
Yes, well, it was initially a chapter in the book. And I think you probably know quite well, Suella, that the actual title is a negotiation. So, because, you know, when you come to a project like writing a book, you're not even thinking about what's next. You're just thinking about trying to get your vision onto the page. But then there is a whole business and professionals who will tell you, you know, this cover that you're thinking about is not going to sell well. This title, it's either sending the wrong message. And so it was a bit of a negotiation back and forth. But ultimately what happened was we removed all the chapters, the chapter titles, and selected one. One became the title of the book. And I think it makes a lot of sense, because part of the story is the tension. I think for many of us born and raised in Africa, we have a lot of exposure to what I call a spiritual world, which is not under a traditional religion. So, for example, I am Catholic, but that is very, very specific. And one thing that I grappled with, and I think lots of other people, including the character Grace, grapples with, is how do you reconcile some of your belief systems? There is the traditional, and then there is the quote-unquote traditional Western Christianity or different religions that we may follow. But those two things oftentimes are not. They live in this tension in our hearts. And so trying to navigate it. And Grace has a very logical mind. She has a conversation with Father Sebastian about the spirit world. And her mind is like, you either believe in spirits or you don't. But you cannot tell me that, you know, the Holy Spirit is the right spirit, and then my ancestral spirits, who I know, and I can get behind you if you say you don't believe in any spirits, but if you believe in some, then you must embrace at least the possibility of all. And certainly, she gets quite annoyed with him because he's very dismissive. You know, he calls it pagan mumbo jumbo. And she's like, no, this is what I believe in. This is what I know to be true. So that's kind of where the title comes from. And then, you know, part of the sort of more spiritual side, ancestral spiritual side, is represented by the leopard, which is symbolic in the story. And so you kind of have this lion versus leopard a little bit in the backdrop of the story. But the main arc is really around the thriller, and it's very plot driven.
And I mean, the lion's den, Grace finds herself in a lion's den, Bessie finds himself in the lion's den, and readers will definitely see the clear connection from the title to the story. You know, Grace is such a fierce character, and you, I can see her in how you paint the story, frail, wearing hand-me-down, you know, suits and all of that. But she's recently qualified with little experience, and she's taking on a difficult case in a difficult environment with very little support from her superiors. And yet she's so highly convicted that she can handle this case. Why is she so determined to take on this task?
I think it's in her DNA. This is why she became a lawyer. She's a rural... you know, she grew up in a poor rural environment. Everybody except her father told her that this is not possible for her. But she was very, very driven and determined. And, you know, she had to claw her way out of the village and into school, and had to fight and maintain really good grades to be there. So this is really her motivation. This is, and I know certainly in my work, but probably in everybody's work, we meet these people who are so passionate, so focused, so determined that they will get things done. These are the change makers in society. But oftentimes they pay a price. I mean, in South Africa, you know, we talk about and revere Mandela. But the price, I think sometimes we forget the price that his whole life, pretty much, his adult life was spent, most of it was spent in prison. That is a terrible price. But he knew. And he went forward nonetheless. And Grace is inspired by that. She is that type of person, like Mandela. And she's very enamored of Gandhi, but that is who she is. She will go to the ends of the earth for justice, and she will pay the price.
And in the book, you write about the difficult relationship that she had with her mother, who tried to sell her off to marriage, and the tough upbringing in the village where young women like Grace, you know, were not destined for the courtroom, but a life being married young and most likely abused. Why was it important for you to bring this her upbringing to the fore? And which is something I guess we still see with some women on the continent to this day.
Yeah, many, not just on the continent, but across the world. Child marriage, under a young marriage is very, very real. And in a rural area, it happens quite a lot. That is the norm. That is the expectation for young girls once they hit puberty, that they are now ready for marriage. And I wanted to interrogate a little bit. I mean, it's an important part of the story, but I don't spend too much time, but just really to show how far Grace has come. And why, you know, how she has that inner strength, because she understood that her destiny is different, but nobody else around her could quite see that. But for the average girl in the village, the expectation is that she will get married, and trying to actually come at this situation with some empathy for the mom. She's not a great character. You know, she does try to marry her daughter off to the chief, but in her mind, she's really trying to ensure that her child has a good future. They are poor. You know, the mother says, you want to continue scratching in the dirt like a chicken for the rest of your life. You know, she's suffered. The mom has suffered tremendously. She's had a hard life. So from her point of view, she doesn't see it as Grace sees it, being sold down the river. She sees it as, I'm setting you up for life, and you are talking about some pipe dream about going to Lusaka, even getting to Lusaka, going to university for 4 years, getting a degree, getting a job. All of that seems very far-fetched, whereas what I am proposing is a guaranteed good life for you, and by the way, me too. You know, the mom.
Yeah, it was goals based on her context. And it shows you how each generation has different levels of what success means. And I guess there's always this tension that exists between the generations around that might have worked for you, but doesn't work for me, you know, and you show that very well in the book. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I think that's just a theme almost all of us can relate to, right? We want to do one thing and our parents are like, no, but you should be a fill in the blank, whatever your parents think is best for you. And particularly if you want to have a creative career, I think then you'll definitely get some input, welcome or unwelcome, from parents, family.
Correct. Though you no longer live in Zambia, you've got family. I've listened to some interviews. You've got family. You've got friends, but you no longer live there. But one can see your love and affinity that you have for the country, that in your writing, the way you describe the landscapes in the book, the use of the language and the story. Please speak to us a little bit about this love affair you have with Zambia.
It's my home. It's really interesting because my husband's African-American and I've lived in the States on and off since, I'm aging myself, but 1991, where I went to university. And he's like, why is it whenever you say home, you mean Zambia, when you've now spent more of your life outside of Zambia than inside of Zambia? And I was like, for me, it really is home. And it's beautiful. I think most of us who dwell and have lived and grown up on the continent, I mean, South Africa, for example, you marvel at the splendor. So I wanted to capture that, even though I'm talking about difficult subjects, real subjects, tough topics. I also wanted to capture the beautiful side, and particularly the physical majesty that we have the privilege of existing in. I'm in Zambia right now, so, you know, I can look out the window and There's an amazing lemon tree that my parents have, and the garden is very green, and it's just lots of bougainvillea. They have bamboo, amazing flowers that grow easily. Whereas when I go back to the States, I'm in a condo. So I definitely, to answer your question, I really wanted to make sure that I captured the beauty of the country and also the generosity of peoples.
You've already alluded to this one earlier, but maybe you can elaborate a bit. Spirituality is one of the key themes in the book, you know, Christianity, which of course is the religion that the law is actually based on, and in the faith that Grace and Bessie have been brought up in. And then there's also African spirituality, which Grace explores in the story, and her connection with the ancestors. Is there a specific point you wanted to try to make to highlight this theme? It's that tension you spoke of earlier.
Yeah, but I think also I am a Catholic, and I think that the church has a lot to answer for, and they have not answered for yet on many, many levels, including, you know, LGBTQ plus rights. I think the church has not been support. They've been part of the problem. Let's put it that way. And I think there's been some slight movements with the current Pope, just speaking about my own faith and my own Catholicism, but it's not even nearly enough. And I think that has a huge impact, as you said, on the law as it was then when the book was set. But the law persists today. The homophobia persists today. And I think that part of the answer to solving and changing hearts and minds is really engaging religious leaders to be more forceful and more forthcoming and more supportive of everybody's right, a real inclusive agenda, which starts with constitutional law, but also you talk about criminal laws. And then you're talking about, you know, in the church, they talk about divine law and community, societal discrimination, hatreds, and prejudices. I think all of those things are connected. And through the story, I try to make it clear how it works. Even though we talk about these big picture ideas, but at the end of the day, the reality is people who suffer most are the vulnerable.
I was intrigued by how you wrote the character of Will Bess, also known as Bessie, by those who loved him. He's clearly one of the leading characters of the book. And but besides us meeting him, you know, when Grace meets him in prison after demanding to see him and haggling with a cop that wanted a bribe from her, we don't really get to see him again. And his whole existence is in the book is described by other people and his family, his friends, his co-workers. There's this air of mystery around his existence. Was that intentional?
Yes, it was very intentional. I think partly because I wanted the story to be told from the point of view of Grace. Grace is a character I can fully inhabit. I think Bessie as a queer teen, I cannot inhabit as fully. And I think there are other authors out there who are doing that work really well. But I really wanted to interrogate how Bessie could be at the beating heart of the story. We could still get to know this beautiful, amazing young person who is coming into their own sense of self, identity. So I really want, every time we see Bessie through the eyes of either Grace or a family member, I really was trying to make sure that Bessie explodes on the page.
I mean, right up until the end, I'm still like, but the last time I saw Bessie was in that interrogation room, but his thread is throughout, through the various voices. So that was well done for me. I was like, okay, and I understand your reasons for saying that and saying it's not a character you could fully inhabit like the way you could inhabit Grace. So would you say there's elements of Grace in you? There's elements of you in Grace?
I think when you're the author, you have to, for all your characters, not just the main ones, even the dark characters, I think you have to mine your interior. Otherwise, they don't come off the page as authentic. At least in my case, I felt like I really have to try and get into the space, the mind of each character, whether they're major characters or minor characters. But I feel very complimented when people ask if there's any sort of autobiographical elements to it. And the truth of the matter is Grace is 100% fictional. She is not me at all. I grew up in Lusaka. I didn't grow up in the rural area, although the Nyampande is our family village. And my dad was actually born in Nyampande village. And we go there. I have a lot of familiarity with the place, the landscape, what it's like to be a rural child, but I have not actually lived that life. So this is really me again trying to go into the parts of me that I can reach to bring color and breathe life into the characters. But none of the characters are me. None of them. I wish I were more like Grace. I mean, she's such an amazing human being. And in some ways, she was who I thought and hoped I would become when I was a young lawyer. And so, I mean, I haven't done evil things in my life. I hope that I've done good work. I work in gender equality. I'm actually on a 6-month sabbatical right now, so I can spend time writing. But I am also not Grace. I have not in my own life gone as far as she will go. She will literally go to the ends of the earth. So I have great admiration for Grace and for the wonderful people I've met on my own life's journey who are like Grace. We meet them. They will, you know, whatever their cause is, you know that this is a formidable, fierce person because they will not stop. They are relentless. They will keep going until they get it. Whether it makes sense or it doesn't make sense is almost besides the point for them. They just keep going. They just keep going. So, yes, to answer your question, I'm afraid to say there's not enough of me in Grace, but I hope the best parts of myself are reflected in her character, her strength, her courage. And I hope also I take motivation and inspiration from her, even though she is a fictional character and even though she is young enough to be my child.
I guess we all can glean from her that courage to take up the cause for justice, and that comes through strongly. The book also takes an opportunity to paint a picture around the political landscape in Lusaka at that time, you know, in the 1990s, the corruption, the control over the media, and so forth. Why was it important for you to paint this political picture?
That was what was happening at the time. And so I think you can't write a novel set at a particular time and ignore the realities. This was a really critical time in Zambian history, actually global history. You think about, you know, Zambia, we were just at the cusp of a regime change. You know, South Africa, the same thing. It was the end of apartheid. Conversations around Mandela coming out, and you know, there was the Berlin Wall was coming down. So this was a really important time in history, and also the sense that progress was inevitable. I remember thinking that, wow, once this happens, we're never going to go back. It's just forward, forward, and now here we are again. And so, interestingly enough, many of these themes are so resonant today. Right, the rise of authoritarianism is coming back, and how do we, as individuals who support human rights, how do we think about how we're going to protect ourselves, our neighbors, our communities, our families? And I think one of the themes that's really important to me is that we cannot go into silos and say, "Well, I am just a woman's. I only work on women's rights. I don't." LGBTQ plus communities, or I only work on HIV AIDS rights. I don't get involved in other. I think that has been detrimental to forward progress. Very easy to divide and conquer and have, you know, different groups not linking arms and pushing forward together. And I think that's one of Grace's superpowers. She really has an inclusive vision. She really understands the fundamental nature of human rights, and that to deny one person their human rights is really to deny everybody their rights. And eventually, guess what? It's going to come around, right?
That's true. How interconnected it all is, and how if you keep quiet, it will come back to your own right at some point. This book was listed in an article by Times Magazine in November 2024 as one of the top 100 books that must be read. Has this meant anything for you? What has it meant for you?
It was a real honor. I think particularly as a debut, you don't know what to expect. You don't even know if you'll get published. So you're kind of toiling away, hoping, but not knowing. So to get published, I think, is a rare privilege. And then to get recognized on top of that, it's been truly wonderful. And as I said, the story is really important. And so I think the more recognition the book gets, the more people will read it. The more people read it, I think the more, at least my sincere hope, is that it will spark a conversation about some of these rights that I think particularly in the continent. South Africa is quite exceptional in terms of their constitutional and legal protections, but that is not the same in most of the rest of the continent, including my home, Zambia, which is really, you know, what is written in the book is true. The law is true. The homophobia is very true. It was true then, and it's true today, unfortunately. So there's a lot of work still to be done. But this is my small contribution to beginning to open up that discussion in a different way. I think this is the power of books. You can talk to people, lots of different people, and there's a spectrum of characters and a spectrum of points of view. So it's not necessarily that I only want to talk to like-minded people. I want to meet conservative people where they are. And my hope is that by rooting for Grace and eventually rooting for Bessie, because it's a huge injustice, they will open their minds to at least taking the next step, be it a small step or a big step. That's really part of the motivation of writing this particular book.
And how has the book been received in Zambia? When I was preparing for our talk today, I saw that you also launched in Zambia. How has it? And I mean, well done on the appeal beyond America, but also being able to bring this book home and having that global appeal. And I was interested, how has it been received for you at home?
Well, ironically enough, the book has not been launched in Zambia. I have launched in South Africa, but not in Zambia. And I think this is a result of the homophobia that exists in this country. I had planned a launch, but at the last minute, the partners who I thought were going to host, apparently they hadn't done their homework, so they didn't know what the book was about. They were just very excited that this was a, you know, local girl done good internationally and in the US and in the UK. But then when they saw what the book was about, and I think some of it is understandable in the sense that people are worried about their own persecution. But to me, it seems a little bit overblown that you would be so worried that you can't even read a book or host a book. So that's been a very big disappointment. So I will do a launch in Zambia, but I'm going to have to do it under my own steam. Usually you're hosted by somebody, in this case in Zambia, a very big book club that welcomes all internationally published Zambian authors. So it was very disappointing and heartbreaking, but it will happen. The beautiful part was South Africa was incredible. The reception, wonderful. And Jonathan Ball, I mean, they really did everything humanly possible to ensure that the book got good publicity, and we had a really fun launch. There was snacks, there was wine, good company. And I got some good press coverage. I did radio for the first time, extremely excited. And it took some of the sting of not launching in Zambia to be able to do it in South Africa. But it's really important to me, not just that the book does well in the US, harkening back to my earlier points about having the conversation. We need to have this conversation on the continent, in other countries other than South Africa, including my own. Yeah, so I will do it. I'm going to host it myself. I'm going to organize it myself. I'm going to buy my own wine. And then I will
get your own snacks and people will come. From an independent bookshop owner, I can tell you, you have to just do it yourself and start small and people will come. People will come. So all the best with that. And maybe my parting shot to you is, which you've already said some of the stuff, but what would you like readers to take away from the book?
First, I want them to be entertained. It is written as a thriller. It is plot driven. It is, even though it took me 9 years, it's not very long. So all of that is really, really intentional. And then the second thing is to open their minds. Open their minds and walk the journey with grace, with an open mind, and hopefully take home some of her vision for the world, which is a better vision for the world. And that will be really satisfying to me if I can achieve those things. But the first thing I need to do is get people to invest in the book. It is an investment. I know that books are expensive and I really don't take it for granted. I am so honored and privileged when people spend their hard-earned money on my book. And I hope it's a worthwhile investment.
And it's a page-turner. It's a page-turner. You're curious to want to know what's next. Yes. Thank you so much, Iris. That was Iris Mwanza. Thank you so much for your thought-provoking book. We wish you nothing but the very best in your writing journey. You said that you're on a sabbatical to write. Copies of Lion's Den are available in bookshops nationwide. From me, Suella Langeni, this has been another episode of PageCast Podcast, where books come to life. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.